Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much. It's great to have you here this afternoon. But whether you're a new parent or maybe your kids have long since left the house, parenting kind of leaves your relationship with your spouse a little different. Maybe you found yourself not being able to spend quite as much time as you'd like to on your marriage. In the midst of taking care of these little people in our home, sometimes our marriage doesn't get the attention that it needs or maybe deserves. Well, if you can relate to any of that, then you're in for a treat today because author Becky Thompson joins me today to discuss her new book, Love Unending, just in time for you to get started with a couple of challenges, and maybe your relationship can look different as early as this Valentine's Day. Well, let me tell you a little bit about Becky, and we'll get started on the show. Becky Thompson is the author of Scissortail Silk, which is a blog that draws a global audience of millions. She's speaking to the often overlooked struggle of balancing life as a wife and mother and daughter of God. Becky has a captivating way of becoming the voice for women in need of hope and healing and the Father's love. Her candid way of sharing her heart extends this unspoken invitation for women to feel as though they've gained a friend and realize that they're not alone. Well, her blog grew dramatically in 2014 from an average monthly audience of about 1,000 to 1.5 million when she switched her message from writing about fashion to writing about hope. We're going to hear a lot more about that. She's the author of Hope Unfolding, and the book we're talking to about today is Love Unending, Rediscovering Your Marriage in the Midst of Motherhood. Welcome, Becky.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. I'm so excited to be with you this afternoon.
Well, I was so fascinated by your story of first writing about fashion and just and the love that you have for all things fashion related, and then kind of switching, and that was due to a blog post, something you posted in the response you received from women. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That's absolutely right. So I was a stay-at-home mom. And I'm still a stay-at-home mom, but now I'm more of a work-at-home mom. But I was a stay-at-home mom with two very young children, and I felt like I had sort of lost myself in taking care of them and the house. And I looked in the mirror one day, and I thought, man, you need some new clothes. you need to put something together, sister. So I went online shopping because it's so much easier than shopping in a store with small children. We can all relate to that as mothers, I think. And found this great online boutique. Needless to say, the boutique owner contacts me and says, after some correspondence between the two of us, you know, asks if I'm a fashion blogger. And it was just this really interesting relationship that struck up. And no, I'm not a fashion blogger, but I can be if you'd like me to be one. And she said, sure, I'll send you free clothes. There's a cool story behind that. But as I began this fashion blog, I kind of had this thing in my heart that said, you know, you always wanted to grow up and talk about what Jesus can do for women. You wanted to grow up and you wanted to spread a message of truth and of authentic hope. What are you doing telling ladies to put on that pair of pants and they'll feel better about themselves? You know, what are you doing with this message? And I had this sort of deep conviction in my heart, but there was something about it that felt significant and as if the Lord was saying, trust me. So while there is nothing, you know, wrong with a message I began with, which is fashion and caring for yourself, which is such a needed thing for moms anyway. Mm-hmm. I really felt like the Lord was directing me to follow him and to trust him, but that there was something else coming. So I began also writing on the fashion blog about just little things happening in my life with my children, moments that I was telling them about Jesus, moments where I was feeling hopeless and I needed the encouragement. And I almost wrote letters to myself, if you can sort of imagine that, you know, surely there's another mom out there that needs this encouragement. So I would write that as well. And those were the posts online that were really getting response. Those are the ones where people were saying, thank you for writing. I thought I was the only one. And I thought, man, if there are other women that are feeling this way, I'm just gonna put this out there. Well, late one night I sat down and I started to really consider what had changed the most about my life since the beginning of, you know, motherhood and since I became a mom and in this phase of life, what had really changed the most. And I looked over at my husband and I realized I hadn't really talked to him in a couple of days. You know, we had seen each other. We've been in the same home. He was here, but I missed us. And so I wrote a blog post about how I wished in the beginning, when everyone was giving us the opportunity to prepare for a baby, when everyone was telling us what was going to happen at the hospital and what was going to happen in the first few days of coming home, that someone had also said, you desperately need to remember your marriage. Because if I'd had that advice from day one, then surely we wouldn't have gotten to the place where I looked at him and wondered, I wonder what's happening in his life right now. I just really miss him. And so I wrote that post online on my Fashion Turned Hope website, and it went viral in every sense of the word. It went from, I published it at midnight. I remember hitting publish around midnight after the house was quiet, and I woke up the next morning, and 7,000 people had clicked the share button, said, not only me too, but I hope everybody else online also reads this. You know, they wanted to share it with their friends, their family. And they wanted to spread that hope. And I thought, wow, my little post that could. What an amazing thing. But it didn't stop there. And in that first month, 1 million women had said, not only read it, but had shared it with their friends as well. And it took off. It just took off, and it took my readership from 1,000 online readers to basically 1 million every month for the next few years. And this was back in 2014. And that has been my refocus of marriage and motherhood and the father's love and how it can all work together.
Well, you know, your book kind of starts out by asking us to look back, because we all remember those feelings we had when we first started dating our spouse, how a text or phone call or a date might kind of send us into dreamy land of what it might be like if we were actually married. And you're asking us to look back so that we can then look forward. Why do you do that?
Well, I think falling in love is so simple. I mean, it just really is. Both people have not only feelings and emotions, but there's the dreaming and the thoughts and all of the picturing to come. And love flows freely. I give my heart freely. He gives his heart freely. There is no end to this cycle and this circle of giving and receiving. But when children come into the picture, or really anything, you know, anything life-changing, just time can even be one of those things that comes in, it changes the giving. And so when one person or both people stop freely giving and stop freely showing and stop contributing to this cycle of easy love, of the gestures and the kind words and the greeting, when they come home at the end of the day, or you come home at the end of the day, then it's hard to respond back in love. It's hard to love first when you don't feel loved back. And so who's going to break that cycle? And that's really the foundation of Love Unending, is going back and saying, this is what I did in the beginning, and this is how I'm going to show love so that my husband can respond to it, and we can continue this cycle of easy giving and easy receiving that's not just effortless, but is intentional.
Mm. It's such a brilliant way to kind of remember what it was that attracted you to that person being in your life in the first place, because those are the same things that, as I read through your stories and your challenges, that will lead us back to being in that same spot of just being excited to have this person in our lives. But sometimes those emotions, they kind of get buried under just this hurriedness that we find ourselves in, and whether it's loads of laundry or bills to pay or sometimes just exhaustion, it's difficult to get ourselves back to that point, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It really is. And so that's when that cycle begins of, well, if I don't have the time to put forth the effort, you know, and in the craziness and in the busyness of the day, and then how are we going to continue any sort of passion or any sort of intimacy in our relationship? How do we keep ourselves connected when there are so many other things really pulling for our attention and our time? And that's the challenge that we have to tackle. And so we look back at the beginning and we think, well, what did I do back then? What made then and now so different? And the reality is, while many things change, it really doesn't require much effort to do what we already did. It's not like we're doing something new. These are things that we already did in the beginning. We're familiar with them. We just have to remind ourselves of what we did so we can remember how we felt and why we did them.
So as you began interacting with your readers, you found a common need among moms and wives was just a need to nurture their marriage. Can you tell us more about that and then how you maybe were changed by hearing from them as well?
Well, you know, after I wrote that original blog post about, you know, I forgot how to be a wife when I was busy being a mom. What do I do? I wish someone had given me that advice. And I just sort of put out the Me Too post, the Do You Feel This Way Too post. I got thousands of messages within days of women saying, yes, so what do we do? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I don't know. Send me a message when you find out. I mean, that we can pray, I guess. But it really set me on this journey, Joe, of trying to figure out what the answer was. You know, where do we begin? How do we go back? Is there a way to rediscover our marriages in the midst of motherhood? And that is really their questioning and this common theme of what do we do? We feel like you, but what's next? Drove me to the place where I needed an answer. And I realized it wasn't enough to just acknowledge that things were different. There had to be a solution to it. God had to have a plan and a strategy for us as married wives and mothers. And so it was actually a conversation I had late one night with my dad. And I sat down on his couch, and I was pregnant with my third baby, and so I was staying near the hospital. I live in the middle of nowhere, ways from the hospital where I would need to deliver my baby, and so I went to stay with my parents and until it was time for the baby to come, and I took my two older kids with me. My mom's putting my two older kids to bed, who are still very little at the time, and I'm sitting alone with my dad in the living room. And I look at my dad and I said, Dad, all of these women are asking and I don't have an answer because I feel just like them. I don't know how I'm supposed to be a great wife when I'm busy being a mom, especially with a new baby on the way. What am I supposed to do? Dad's like, where do I start? And this is the coolest thing. And it's the foundation of the book. My dad looks over his shoulder to make sure my mom's like not listening or nearby, as if he's going to tell me some sort of secret. I'm thinking, what kind of secret has my dad been keeping, you know, for 40 years? He's been happily married to my mom for nearly 40 years. And, you know, I've never heard him raise his voice once. I've never heard him speak unkindly. I've never seen him do anything intentionally to hurt her feelings or be inconsiderate. And so I don't know why I didn't think to ask him his advice before, you know, what's your trick, Dad? But he decided to share a secret that night. And he said, Becky, every day I wake up and I tell myself that it's the first day I'm married to your mom. And it took me a minute. I thought to myself, well, what would that even look like? That's a nice thought, Dad, but I don't think people can really live like that. I'm pretty sure you're an exception to some sort of crazy rule. the first day, Dad, that would mean that there was no yesterday. That would mean that there wasn't a list of all the things that my husband's done that drives me crazy, that I can hold against him. It would be a clean slate every morning with intentional love shown from the time you open your eyes until the time you go to sleep. How would we treat our spouses if it was the first day we interacted? Mm. And so I went back to my life and I started making a list. I really began with this list of all of the things that had changed in my marriage since day one, not just since kids, but since day one. And, you know, I began from the moment I woke up. How do I say good morning? How do I say hello when he comes home at the end of the day? How do I speak to him? How do I make requests of him? How do I forgive him? You know, all of these things. And I thought, well, I can't wake up and live tomorrow like it's the first day. That would be all encompassing. And I don't really even know where to begin. But I took my list and I broke it down into 21 days, into 21 specific things that had changed. And then I focused on that for the whole day, journaling my progress. And that is how Love Unending was born. I went back to the beginning and I realized that sometimes we have to go back to the beginning to keep love from ending, to keep it fresh and to keep it alive. And so it turns out that my dad's 40-year secret is what is saving marriages now, and not just saving them from the brink, because it is already doing that, but saving marriages from routine, saving marriages from, you know, just being something we wake up and do, and it's causing them to come alive again. And so it's been a really cool journey that began really 2 years ago now, but to see it, the fruition of this project has it just been impactful in my own heart, the stories that are coming in. It's just, it's amazing that the questioning of what do we do next finally have an answer, you know?
Well, we're going to talk with Becky about what is it that we do next. Maybe we'll discuss a couple of these themes, of those 21 themes that she has, on how we can enrich our marriage, how we can learn to love our spouse again the way we did once, or maybe the way we still do. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender, and pleased to be speaking with Becky Thompson today. Becky is an author, written a book called Love Unending, Rediscovering Your Marriage in the Midst of Motherhood, and she invites all of us to remember what love was like when we first met our husband. And her book is designed to kind of reignite our hearts toward our husbands as well. So, Becky, one of the things that you write about is just this kind of the way that you first met your husband, the way you felt when you first met him. And of course, since you love fashion, you met him at a mall. Tell me a little bit about that and how that transpired.
Oh man, that's one of my favorite stories. So I was home from college for the summer and my parents had moved. And so it was a new town. I didn't have any friends. So when I went home, I was really pretty isolated. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go to the mall and get a job. I had worked some retail in high school. And so I walked into the mall and I went to one of my favorite stores and I applied and they hired me on the spot and that was really fun. But as I was leaving the mall, I really felt like the voice of the Lord said, keep walking. And who am I to argue with Jesus when he tells me to stay longer at the mall? That's something I always joke. But I felt like he said, keep walking, and it really felt like a strong urge. So I was going to go to my car and I came around this fountain just as this woman put a now hiring sign down on a cart, you know, one of those kiosks in the middle of the mall. And this kiosk sold clothes that they shipped in from LA. It was before the days of, you know, boutiques and pop-up shops like that. So they would go to LA, they'd find trendy fashions, and they brought them back here to the Midwest in Oklahoma. And so she puts this now hiring sign on, and I thought, well, that's a pretty good coincidence that she's sending that down as I come around the corner. And I asked, you know, pointing to the sign, you're hiring? And she said, yes. And I thought, well, this seems simple. I can sit on that stool right there and I can read my Bible and pray and make clothes. That sounds like a lot of fun. Make outfits, not make clothes. There'd be no sewing involved, but I'd be making outfits for display, and it looked like a fun job. So she was the second person to hire me that day. So I went and actually resigned from the first job, fastest and shortest job I've ever had. So I resigned from the first job and took the job at the kiosk. And it was there, working at a kiosk, doodling fashion and writing out prayers for my future husband. That's absolute truth in this notebook, that I met my husband, who was also working at the shoe store right next door. Mm-hmm. And I had no intention of falling for Jared. It's such a fun thing. I had no intention of falling for Jared. I was going to marry a pastor, and we were together going to change the world. Of course, I hadn't met that pastor yet. It was just an idea that I had. I was going to marry this pastor, and we were going to, you know, just be revivalists for the kingdom of God, and we were going to do all these things, and I had all these hopes and dreams, and I felt like God had placed those in my heart. And so when I met Jared at the shoe store, because I needed to use the restroom, that's just the truth of it. Mm-hmm. Those carts don't have restrooms. I had this conversation with him, and he said he was going to be a police officer, and that was the end of that. That was all that was ever going to be, except I kind of fell in love with him, and he kind of fell in love with me. And I thought, well, this is only going to be, you know, a summer relationship, and I'm not meaning to fall in love with him. It was just sort of an accident. So I went back to school that summer fully at a private Christian university in Tulsa, fully intending to marry a pastor from the school, somebody studying ministry. And I did not. I married Jared. And the Lord just revealed to me that he was the right guy. And it was this twist. And there wasn't just one moment. It was confirmation through friends and relatives and time in the Word and just conversations with the Lord and the transformation that took place in Jared's heart over that time, between the time that he asked me to marry him and we met at the mall. And so the Lord just, you know, revealed this to me. But there was a really long time there that when he said, when the Lord said, marry him, that I thought he was going to be a pastor still. I looked at him and I thought, well, if I'm going to marry a pastor and Jesus says, marry this guy, then at the end of the story, this guy's a pastor. He doesn't even know what's coming yet. Like, he doesn't, he thinks he's going to be a police officer, which is a wonderful ministry. It's just not the one that I thought I was going to marry. And so he doesn't even know. I was just so certain that that's what God had planned for my life. And so the first 2 years of my marriage, I just sort of kept asking, you know, do you want to take any Bible classes at the college with me? You know, are you interested in enrolling? Hey, this church is hiring this position. Would that be something you'd be interested in applying for? And he just didn't have any real desire to do that. That wasn't what God had put on his heart to do. And so there was this reconciling in my heart of, if the Lord has asked me to marry him, and if I am certain that this is what God has directed me to do, and this is certain, and God has also put the dream in my heart for ministry, then maybe I'm going to do ministry, but maybe it's not going to look like I imagined it would. Maybe it's not going to be as a pastor's wife, but maybe God is going to do something different. And so the unfolding of that is actually what inspired my first book, Hope Unfolding, and how God revealed, you know, his plan for my life, and how it was very unexpected, you know, from a blog post, really, and from that fashion blog, really, but how it launched this really worldwide ministry that has been so special. But my favorite part of our story, Joe, is that while, you know, I was so certain I knew that this was going to look a certain way, God has brought my husband alongside, and what we are doing together, and how he is allowing, not just allowing, that's the wrong word. I feel like that could be misunderstood. He is supporting and championing me on in what God has called and me to do and placed on my heart to share, and how we are in ministry together. It just doesn't look like I thought it would. It's really cool. So that's how I met my husband at the mall. Isn't that a funny story?
It's a great story, and just shows the excitement, even as you're telling it, the excitement that transpired during that time, and then that you kind of brought into marriage. And now 3 kids later, you know, you're writing a book on how to kind of bring yourself back to that. And so we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. We have to take a quick break, but we're going to talk about what are some of those daily challenges that you've been doing yourself and then writing down that all of us would be able to do as well. So we'll catch that on the backside of this break. If you're listening and you want to learn a little bit more about what it means to have a love that's unending and what are these challenges, well, Becky and her publisher have graciously provided some books to give away. We'd love to get that in your hands. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484, or you can go to myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. There's a way to submit your name that way so that Carissa can get that and put your name on a list. You can have one of those books by the end of the show. We'll do a little drawing. Or maybe you're listening today and you have a great story about something that you've been doing that has changed your marriage, the way that you feel about your spouse, maybe the way your spouse feels about you, and it's worked for you. We'd love to hear that too and be able to share that on our show. You've been listening to Connecting Faith, and we'll be right back. When welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm talking to author Becky Thompson today about her book, Love Unending, Rediscovering Your Marriage in the Midst of Motherhood. And we're talking about this today because you still have some time before Valentine's Day. And I believe after reading her book that if you apply a couple of these themes, these daily themes, that you actually can bring a change to the way you're kind of thinking about your spouse. And of course, you can just ask God to help you in this journey. But that's kind of why we put it right here during this week. So hopefully you'll listen to some of the themes today and put some of those into action. So, Becky, your book is a 21-day journey that kind of gives us a challenge a day that will help us refocus our hearts as parents to kind of recapture that feeling of newness, of being kind of enraptured by our husbands or our wives again. So would you briefly describe why 21 days? And then pick one of the themes that has been particularly meaningful or useful to you.
Absolutely. 20, you know, I, as a young mom, with three young kids, married 10 years, I really can't commit to something long-term. That's what it feels like. You know, I thought about making this project a month, but when we really looked at it, we wanted to address the core issues, the core foundational things that if we changed or shifted our thinking on, would just really propel us into a deeper relationship with our husband. So we narrowed it down to 21 days. But the ones at the beginning sort of build on the others. This is one of my favorite parts. So, you know, the first day, which you can actually read and get a free sample of online, the first day is greet lovingly. And the story that I use in the book, and the reason I start with that is because how we greet our spouse when we come back together with them, whether we've been away working or they've been away working or we've just been apart, sets the tone for everything else. Every other interaction that we have with them, whether we ignore them when they walk in the door and just sort of shout a hello over our shoulders, or whether we go to them and say, you know, I'm happy to see you. I think as young moms, or really any age of mom or any season of being a wife or a mother, sometimes we overlook that opportunity to say, I'm happy to see you and interact with your heart rather than say or communicate, I'm just ready for your help. You know, sometimes I'm just ready for my husband to help with the kids. I'm ready, you know, to not be doing it alone at the house until he's come home from work. And I know that's not the scenario at everyone's house, but I realized that I changed how I looked for my husband since that first day. And when we first started dating, I would look out the window for him, and I would wait for him to come. I would anticipate our time together. And now when I look for him, I'm thinking a few more minutes and daddy's home and I'm not doing this by myself. And so it's not that the action has changed that changes so much, because we might still greet our spouse. I might be the only one who, you know, doesn't always run to the door to hug my husband if my kids are there hugging him. I might not be the only one that's doing that. There might be women who still greet their husbands like they did when they first fell in love. But it's the heart behind the action. You know, it's the intentionality behind the greeting. Are we doing it because it's obligation? Are we truly happy to see them? Are we welcoming them back into our space? The second thing on the list is actually speaking kindly. Now, the story I use in the book, and I don't mind giving out little parts of books. I think that, you know, saying what you can expect is important for people if they want to be a part of this journey. I want our listeners to know sort of what to anticipate. The second day is speaking kindly. You know, the story I use in the book is when my husband and I were dating, there were certain ways that I asked him to do something for me. I might not have said, you know, for example, I'm getting my daughter out of the bath and I need a towel. And if we were dating, I might have said, hey, honey, when you get a chance, will you bring me a towel? And, you know, we didn't have children until after we were married, but so that's just an example of what we would have I would have said if I had a request from him for anything. You know, hey, honey, will you bring me that glass of water off the counter? Will you bring me my purse? I need to look for something. Today, I might say, hey, Jared, bring it. I'm in a hurry. I want to get the kid out of the bath. You know, I'm ready to be done, you know. And so it's not just what we're saying. It's how we're saying it. It's the tone behind our words and reminding ourselves of not just how we made requests or how we said this or that, but the heart behind the words and speaking with intention. And the trick about day one and day two, really through day five, is that they build on each other. So while we're going to greet on day one, we're also going to greet on days 2 through 21. And while we might speak kindly on day two, we're also going to continue that practice of speaking to our husbands like we did when we first fell in love for the rest of the 21 days. And so those are some of the first two. Do we have time for one more? Can
sure.
I share one more? Would that be okay? Sure. So the next one is touch him purposefully. I think that as we sort of get into routines, like I said, where we don't acknowledge that they're in our space like we might have in the beginning. And that doesn't have to be any form of intimate touch at all. It just has to be a, when you were dating, no one had to say, hey, maybe hug your fiance today. Maybe give him a hug. I know that you're tired and the kids have been climbing all over you, but give him a hug. Give him a hug today if you can muster it up. But sometimes as moms, we just get so consumed with kids in our space or kids in our lap or, you know, things that are required of us. Our husbands are standing right next to us and we think, I don't know if I hugged you today. I don't know if I even put my hand on your back. But there are these little gestures, that came so easy and so freely in the beginning that if we look back and we go, man, what would I have done then? Like hug or touch or talk or just spend time with them can change the entire dynamic of our home. So those are the first three that really, I say this to women. I say, if you complete the first 5 days, you will absolutely see a change, whether that's in your husband or in your marriage. I cannot guarantee, but I can guarantee that something will happen in your heart as you realize the part that you can play in changing the atmosphere in your home.
Well, it does seem like I remember my mom telling me that my job, both as a mom and as a wife, if I'm home, when other people come into the house, is to kind of set the climate for that, whether it's my teenager who, you know, might grunt instead of smile, or, you know, whether it's my children who come downstairs and they're very tired, or whether it's my husband who's, you know, coming into the room where I've been, that it's kind of my job, because I'm the one who's in there, to set that climate. And if I set it as a cheerful, hey, welcome into my space kind of place, or if I set it as a I'm really busy and I don't want to bother with you space, that's going to set the tone for that time.
Absolutely. And so the neat thing about this book is that it causes us to look around and purposefully decide what we want to take place in our marriage, not just what we wish would take place in our marriage, not just what we wish would take place in our home, but say, this is what I can do to contribute to what's happening around here. This is what I can do. And it's filtering into our kids as our kids listen to us speak kindly, as our kids watch us greet lovingly, as our kids watch us interact and, put our hand on their back or do whatever these challenges are, they're feeling it. It's setting the climate for not just our marriage, but our family as we show our children what we want. And they're responding. That was one of my favorite parts of living this out in my home, is that my children's behavior changed. They began to speak kindly. They began to interact with us and with each other in a different way. And so this all filters down. It filters down through all of us. And, where we might want, we might say, well, why can't our husbands be doing this challenge? You know, why is this a rediscovering your marriage in the midst of motherhood? And where's the dad book on this? I can't promise that's not coming. But right now, we have to say that we are only responsible for us. You know, sometimes we have a list of all the things we wish they would do or we hoped they would do. But when we take our own marriages really into our hands and put them before the Lord and say, help me do what I can. And so I can create a place for them to respond, for my husband to respond to my kind gesture. So we can complete this cycle and then he can begin to easily show love and he can begin to put out loving gestures that I can respond to. And it can be more of a back and forth between us that our children can watch and be a part of. That's where real transformation takes place, when we stop hoping somebody else will do something and we take authority over our own life and our own marriage and say, God, what can we do together? How can we partner together to bring a wholeness and an excitement and a joy back to right where we are in the middle of everything else?
Well, and in fact, one of the, just as you're talking, I'm thinking about days, some of the themes that you had written about, and they come right to my mind. You had written, you know, if you want something to change, that it's not that we're doing all of these things and taking all of these challenges because we want our husbands to change, but we are changing in the midst of this, and then we're kind of changing together, correct?
Correct. That's exactly right. And it's the unexpected shift in our own hearts that causes the greatest transformation through these challenges. It's not, I'm trying to make him a different person. It's looking at who we are and what we are doing in our marriage that, like we said, sets the climate and sets the tone for how our husbands will respond and how we will interact and what life feels like between us and in our home. So that's the unexpected surprise of the book, that it's not really going to change them, our husbands, like many challenge books are designed to do. It's actually going to change really the perspective of our hearts that makes loving intentionally easy. And it's really not hard to fall back in love when we complete these 21 steps.
One of the steps that you write about is to expect gracefully, that we kind of go into parenting, marriage and parenting, but I think especially parenting, where we expect it to be one way, and then it turns out to not be that way. And sometimes we heap these expectations on our spouse of the way we thought they were supposed to be, or the kind of mom or dad that they were supposed to be, and then realize, mm-hmm. wait a minute, they never signed up for that.
Right. And the funny thing is, we don't often communicate these expectations. We just sort of hold them in our hearts. And then when our spouse fails to live up to these expectations, we're frustrated. Like, they should have known that we thought that they were going to be the type of dad that got off work and ran out in the backyard and played catch for an hour. You know, how are you not that dad? I thought that you were going to be that dad, and I'm frustrated that you're not that dad. But I'm not going to have the conversation. I'm just going to live in these unmet expectations that I kind of hold over you. And it's not a healthy thing. So by expecting gracefully, we reexamine the expectations that we have that we might not even really be thinking about. You know, sometimes we don't even realize that we have these expectations until we sit down and try to put pen to paper and list them out of the unmet expectations and the places where we are frustrated and the things that aren't happening that we wish were happening. And then as we address those and say, well, you know what, I'm going to give them permission to continue to grow. I'm going to give them permission to continue to be, and I'm going to give them the grace that I gave them in the beginning when I would dream about who they would be. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those dreams become a box. You know, I dreamt this and now you must fit this. But in the beginning, our dreams were endless. They were just possibilities. And so we have to continue to dream for who our spouse can be without requiring them to live out those dreams, especially if we're not communicating them. So it really comes down with our expectations to giving them grace to either do it or not do it, but having a conversation about how we're feeling in the middle of all of it, and then letting it go and saying, I'm not going to hold you to these expectations. I'm going to let you be the dad or be the mom or be the person that you're supposed to be, that God is continuing to grow you into being. And I'm going to enjoy this version of you, even though it might not be what I imagined. Mm. There's so much freedom in that, too.
Well, I've been having a conversation today with Becky Thompson. Just a great book that you've written, Becky. And these 21 things that you've asked us to do on a day-to-day basis, they are not difficult. They are things that everyone can do. And I guarantee if you get through those first five, just like she said, you will get through the rest of the 21. If you'd like to find out more about Becky, you can go to her website, BeckyThompson.com, or go to ours at MyFaithRadio.com. We'll have a link to her on our Connecting Faith show page. We do still have a couple of her books to give away, so you can give us a call, 877-933-2484, and we'll try to get that in your hands. Becky, thanks so much for this great resource and just for sharing your heart with our listeners today.
Thank you so much again for having me, Joe. This has been so much fun. I appreciate it.
And I hope you have a happy Valentine's Day, and that everyone listening today will put some of these things into practice as well and see if that can change in just a few days.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for listening today. Had a great conversation with Becky Thompson about her book, Love Unending. You can check out more about her on our website at Connecting Faith. Also, we are going to just go back a little bit to a conversation I had with Holly Girth. She's a life coach, and talking about how we can break free from guilt and condemnation in our lives. Holly writes this about guilt. Dear guilt, you and I have known each other for quite a while now, my whole life, really. We've been close at times, but most often our relationship has been challenging. You're sneaky. You wear all sorts of disguises like humility, concern, and even godliness. And just when I think I recognize you, like I find a new haircut, throw on a pair of shades, or dress up like someone else. So here's what I'm saying. I think it's time for us to part ways, because really, guilt, we aren't doing each other a whole lot of good. You push me around, I enable you. And it's not healthy. Holly, talk about guilt, and how did guilt kind of show up in your life, and how do we turn that around to grace?
Well, I like to say I am one of those sweet Southern girls in a family where guilt is poured out like gravy. We'll have a little guilt with everything. So I feel like I just grew up with just always this sense of guilt hanging over me, that I wasn't enough, that I wasn't doing it enough, and I happened to be part of a legalistic organization when I was young that added to that. And I probably just have some genetic wiring that makes me a little more tightly wound than most folks. So guilt, as I described in that letter, has kind of been a companion of mine. And I realized at some point, you know what, this is not from Jesus. Like, he's the God of grace. And I even looked in Scripture, and in Scripture, guilt is not an emotional term. It's a legal one. Either you're guilty or you're not guilty. And when we receive what Jesus did for us on the cross, we are declared not guilty forever. It's a permanent thing. And so we can let go of guilt and instead embrace grace.
Mm. So this picture that we all seem to have of someone being deserving or not deserving of God's love, it certainly isn't what he had planned for us as believers. What is it that we need to start to believe to be true about God so that we can then believe to be true what he says about us?
I believe just taking hold of God is love and God is grace and God is also holy. We can forget that part because it's a little scary, but the reality of his holiness is what points us to our need for a Savior. And having that Savior is what frees us from guilt, is what frees us from shame, is what frees us from that condemnation we do deserve without him. And so just knowing God's heart and his character, and most of all receiving his work, letting him do it for us. You know, really striving is about saying, I'm going to do it for myself. I'm going to make myself good enough. And grace is saying, you know what? I can't do it. I'm going to let Jesus do it for me. And I think that coming to that point, and it's a place that we come to at salvation first, but then again, over and over, every time we realize, I fell down. I made a mistake. I messed up. I need grace. I'm human. And knowing that God is who he is and will do what he says he will do gives us the security to keep coming back to him again and again.
You know, and you just wrote so beautifully about trying to remember that grace that he gives us and bestows on us and without limitation, that there's not a certain number of times where he's like, all right, that's enough. I can't stand it any longer. You can't receive my grace. And if you think about that, it's kind of the same way that we treat our children. I mean, there doesn't come to a point where I say, oh, that's the 14th milk spill. That's it. You're out of the family. So we don't seem to remember that, though. It doesn't come to our mind as easily as maybe it should. How do you try to support people in remembering those promises to be true?
Well, I think, like the example you gave of a parent and a child, I think we do need people in our lives who will be an example of God's grace to us, who will be literally the hands that reach out to us when we have messed up again, who will be the voice in our ear saying, you know what, God still loves you. I think that's why we need the body of Christ, because it can be hard to picture God, who we have not yet seen, giving us mercy again and again. But if we can experience that through each other, then it can become more real. And we can understand how, yes, we are flawed, but we are also deeply loved.
Hmm. Such good words. You know, one other thing that you wrote along that same line is just this constant need to be looking at other people and maybe comparing their lives to ours. And you wrote eloquently about that, about how we do, especially as women or as moms, as people in the workforce, as friends, we tend to really look at other people and say, well, wait a minute. Maybe if I were more like her, then God would be able to bestow on me a little bit more responsibility, or he would look on me more favorably. And you say that's really a lie that we believe, that to be more like someone else is something we should want.
Yeah, trying to be perfect is really about meeting standards. And so we each tend to come up with our own set of standards. You know, this woman is my standard for what it means to be a great mom. This woman's my standard for what it means to be an awesome worker. And so we have all these people in our lives that we think, if only I could be like her, then I would be okay. And God wants us to know that, you know what? There's only one you. You have a purpose that I created only you for. And the good news is that if there's only one of something, it can't be compared because there's not another one like it. And so he says, instead of comparing, start sharing, because then you find out when you're willing to say, you know what, I'm struggling. That woman that you think is so perfect can say back to you, yeah, me too. You know, like my Facebook page looks awesome, but I am really having a hard time in this area of my life. And so when we take down those walls of I need to be like you, and instead just give each other the freedom to say, you know what, none of us have it together, but we're all better together, then we can stop comparing and then start pursuing the path that God has specifically for us.
Well, and we can need those people in our lives, don't we, that can help us when we are not being that person that people think we are. I just had a conversation with a great friend this morning who I just said, I cannot keep this up any longer. And she said, you don't have to. But we need those people in our lives to kind of speak truth, don't we?
Yes, absolutely. I had a friend text me this morning and say, you know what, I'm having a really hard time. I feel like I should be strong and I can't. And all I said was, it's okay to not be okay. You know, because it is. And sometimes that's all people need to hear and all our own hearts need to hear, not the answer or how to fix it or the ways we can try harder, but just, you know what, we're human. And that means sometimes we're just not going to be all right, but we're loved anyway.
One of the other lies you say we tend to believe is, I don't have anything to offer. Why does that seem to plague us so much?
I think that we just doubt our gifts, and probably a lot of that is from the enemy, too, that he would love nothing more for us to hide our treasure and for it never to be given in the way God intended. And so I think, again, that's related to the comparing, and we can just step back and say, you know what? God made me, and he scattered the stars into place. He put this world into being, and that means that he has placed something beautiful and worthwhile within me. And I can share it. And it doesn't have to be perfect. He is the God of the loaves and fishes who says, you know what, give me what you got and I'll make it enough. And so I think we can spend years saying, I need more education. I need more experience. I need to be more like this person. I need to get this struggle in my life together or God's not going to be able to use me. And instead he's just saying, just hand over what you got. I'll make it enough. I'll make you enough. Because it's not really about you. It's about me and my glory. And even in your weakness, I can be strong.
Well, and we do tend to put those kind of things on a list. Well, if only I were this, or maybe he'll be able to use me when I become this, or maybe I'm not ready yet. These things that we think we can attain by being perfect or performing well, it seems to be ingrained in us at a very young age, or at the very least when we start kind of working independently, where we're being judged, I guess, even though we don't want to be judged, but we kind of are. So what do you say to those people who say, I need to strive because once I get this, then I will be accepted or then I will be loved?
I would say that God's desire from us is not perfection, it's obedience. And so he's not saying, wait until you can do it just right, or make sure that you have all your ducks in a row. He's saying, just take the next step. Just say yes to me. And we see that all through Scripture, that he uses these wildly messy, still broken, struggling people like David and Moses and Noah. And he says, you know what? If you say yes, that's all I require of you. I will take care of the rest. I already know that it's not going to go perfectly. I already know that you have more to learn, and it's okay. I'm not asking you to be flawless. I'm asking you to just be faithful.
Well, just some fun conversations today to just talk about the faithfulness of God in your life and how can that affect your marriage as well. Just Becky Thompson giving us some wonderful ways to kind of change our own thinking that maybe that will affect our marriage. And then also just listening to Holly talk about this hang up sometimes we have about guilt and how that is not at all what God would want us to feel or to have in our lives. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our shows on Connecting Faith today. And if you missed something, you'd like to get a podcast, listen to the podcast. You can just go to myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith. You can listen to any of our programs that way, or really any programs on Faith Radio. My Faith Radio just has such a wealth of resources available for you in podcasts or in blogs or in information. And one of the things that you'll find on our website as well is the Northwestern Christian Writers Conference that's taking place here in July. If you'd like to find out more information about that, you can look on our website, register there as well at Northwestern Christian writersconference.com. It would be a great way to learn more about what it means to become a writer and to meet with some great people who could give you some feedback as well.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.